Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, we made it back. I'm Richard Keys.
Have I got to say that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm Andy Gray.
Well, you haven't got to say I'm
Richard Keys. Keys. I'm Andy Gray.
You need to announce yourself.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, do it again then.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Finger. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
I'm Richard Keys.
And I'm Andy Gray.
Excellent. Okay, this is number three in the series. It took us a while to get beyond the pilot and start again, but nevertheless, having done that, Andrew, we are available on a weekly basis. Now, this is an exclusive podcast. You won't find us anywhere else. Do follow and subscribe. Share on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at Keys and Gray, A-N-D, Keys and Gray Pod, and on Instagram at Keys and Gray, the podcast. You can email to Keys and Gray, the podcast, at gmail.com. Okay, so that's the...
Homework?
Housework? Yeah, that's the house announcements done. Yes. Yeah. So what have we got this week? Our guest, I'm really looking forward to spending time with, is a man who has a reputation for being stern.
Really?
Mm. You know him, you played with him.
I know.
You've known him all of your career.
I've known him since he was 17.
To those of us that don't know Walter Smith,
I know.
He comes across as a very serious man.
Until you meet him.
People would say that of Kenny Dalglish as well.
Yes, that's fair.
Who's one of the funniest men, I think, that you could spend time with. So Walter Smith is our guest. What else do we have? We have the revelation of a cunning plan, indeed a conspiracy, to stop Liverpool ever winning the title again.
Sorry? Run that past me again?
A conspiracy, I think we can describe it as.
See, I like doing this show because I never know what you're going to throw at me.
I know. And it's better. It's better that that's the case. Because your first reaction is the best reaction. And there is only one first. So if I warn you, I'm not going to get what I'm looking for, am I? That's why many times down the years I haven't said anything.
Right. So conspiracy.
A conspiracy to stop Liverpool ever winning the title again. I think I probably should share that with you.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, I had this ready and then had to change in order to find the details about how to contact us. Former Arsenal boss Arsene Wenger wants to replace throw-ins.
Ah, I've heard this.
With kick-ins, as he plans to radically freshen up the game in his new role with FIFA. Now, I can see you shaking your head.
Yep.
Let me give you some detail. I've discussed with you previously that it was a presentation from David Dean, former vice chairman at Arsenal, who said Arsene and Kalina are working on a way of calling offside technically.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll come around to it.
That was bad enough, yeah.
I would like to change the throw-in rule, says Arson. 5 minutes before the end. A throw-in for you should be an advantage. But in these situations, you're facing 10 outfield players in play, whilst you only have 9. Stats show that in 8 out of 10 of those throw-in situations, you lose the ball. In your half of the pitch, you should have the possibility to take a kick instead.
Just in the last 5 minutes?
In the last five?
You said five, I think, didn't you?
Five minutes. Yeah, I think, well, he hasn't been specific about that. Look, it's called football, so yes. Why not?
No, sorry.
Why?
No, well, because it's a throw-in.
Well, it's always been a throw-in,
the name
but
tells
does that
you.
Mean that
so
we
what do
have-
we do then? So we then, I've got an idea. So every throw-in that goes out, it goes out there, you're 80 yards from goal, and you just lump it up the pitch to the edge of their box.
You could, but
because you can't be offside. Wait a minute now. See this? That would need a fundamental change in the laws of the game again.
Of course.
Right? So then, at the moment, you can't be offside from a throw-in.
No.
Right? So they would have to then, so if I'm playing and I'm chasing a game and I get a throw-in and the edge of my own 18-yard box, parallel mm-hmm. with that, I'm getting my goalie to go out and smack it right up into their penalty area.
Yes.
Well, what's fair about that?
Well,
Rory, why don't you just throw it in?
Rory Delac could have done that.
No, I'm sorry. No, I know, but no, I'm not having that. No, Arson is I love Arson, love talking to him, but no.
I was in conversation
Kick
with
in.
Him.
No.
I was in conversation with him via text this week. I'll reveal
right.
more in just a moment.
Good.
We've discussed this. So, I would also like it to be that there is no offside as long as a single body part of a player that can score is in line with the defender. In other words, turn the law on its head, whereas now we look across the line and if a toe is a millimetre offside, it's offside. What Arson's saying is, if your trailing foot is level with the defender and the rest of your body is in front, you're onside.
No.
Yes? Why not? We want to see goals scored. Everybody's saying at the moment, why are there so many goals? Who cares? Enjoy it. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And the reason there's so many goals is that VAR's not getting involved very much.
Well, that's one reason I'd grant you. So, offside?
No. Then you can be a yard offside, a metre offside.
You can be.
Right?
Well, you can be
a metre offside,
well,
Richard.
As long as your trailing foot is level
yes,
with the defender.
Yes, but you can still be a metre offside.
You're onside by a metre.
No, you're off.
You've got to look at it differently.
No, you don't have to look at it differently.
Wenger is also looking to alter set pieces, including free kicks, so a player can touch the ball more than once, in other words, play it to himself, and allowing outswinging corners to go out of play behind the goal before coming back onto the field.
So can we do that with throw-ins as well?
Well, you're not taking throws. You're taking tap-ins.
No. I mean, I'm sorry. If the ball goes out, the reason there are dimensions on a football pitch and lines is so that the laws of the game are covered by them.
Yes, but
if the ball bends out of play, it's out of play.
No, Wenger goes on to say, we're also considering other things. The corner that goes out of play and comes back in could be made valid. This would create a new goal-scoring opportunity. There is also the option of quickly playing
a corner.
There is also the option of quickly playing a free kick to yourself. Why not keep the game moving?
So you can just tap it and dribble yourself?
Yes.
Oh, get off. Come on. Listen, honestly, this game, and I'm not anti-progress. I am anti-ridiculous progress. I'm anti-making up things sake of making them up.
No.
Like the kickoff law. I mean, did it really need 6 months of discussion?
That's a piece
of
nonsense.
So you didn't kick it to your mate?
That's a piece of nonsense.
Nonsense. Throw a corner kicks going out of the plane, coming back in, should stand? Nonsense. Throw-ins being kick-ins? Nonsense.
I did put to him a number of other smart ideas. In shootouts, take penalties both ends.
Yeah, I agree with crowds in and
yes.
crowds at either end. I agree.
Big games always
shoot into
have
your own fans.
Split stadiums.
Yeah.
It's an advantage to take in front of your own fans. That's why they toss up for it.
Yeah.
I think that's completely
like big
wrong.
Tournaments, the European Championships and particularly World
yes.
Cup.
Yes.
Tournaments
yes.
like that, there is always fans at
yes.
either end.
No subs after 90 minutes.
I don't mind that.
I'm tired with coaches
time.
Cheating and wasting time. Whatever happened to leaving the field at the nearest line? We've forgotten
Some
all
do.
About that.
Some do.
And also, no extra time. We don't need extra time
yeah,
in a modern game. No extra time.
Agreed. Do you know what I agreed? I watched Scotland last night, right? Just
yeah.
an offshoot.
Oh, my goodness.
We got through, but we were awful. Mm. But they looked nervy and edgy, the boys. And I can get that because it was a massive game. But the last thing any of those players needed, and I include Israel players in this as well, was 30 minutes of extra time.
Nonsense.
30 minutes of tedium. It should have been 90 minutes.
One last change.
Bang.
Away goals should no longer count double.
Correct.
It is an unfair advantage.
See?
And actually, it these days, it encourages teams to defend a 1-0 lead.
Can I just ask you something?
Yes,
if you're coming up with those ideas that I agree with,
yes,
that seem to be positive as regards to football, why are you not working with Arsene Wenger?
I did offer.
Did you?
I said more than happy to come and work as number two.
But those are things that don't affect the game, but actually make it better. What Arsene's doing, and listen, I have huge respect for Arsene Wenger, right? Love him to bits. Love chatting to him about football. But it's making change for change's sake, I object to.
I understand that, but I too share your affection for Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
A genius. The only other player, person, individual, manager, whatever he may have been at the time, that I've enjoyed as much talking to football about, apart from yourself, is Glenn Hoddle. And ironically, they spent time with each other, didn't they, in Monaco?
Yes.
The reason I say it's a conspiracy to stop Liverpool ever winning the title is because
they've got a throwing coach.
Thomas Groenemark
throwing coach. Yeah, yeah.
I work on the long, fast, and clever, he says in introducing himself and discussing throw-ins.
Yeah.
You could say that I coach intelligence when it comes to throw-ins, he says. I'm not afraid to say that most professional players possess very little intelligence in this respect. And among amateurs and young players, it tends to be even worse. 99% of the professional players and coaches I'm in contact with have never practiced throw-ins, and those that have not practiced at a particularly high level. See, a number of people analysed what went wrong at Aston Villa for Liverpool.
Right, throw-ins.
Correct.
What was the seven goals that Villa scored? No. Nothing to do with
you
that.
You see, this is... I know you and I have had...
Sorry, throw-in. Seriously, did someone analyse that and say the reason Liverpool got beat at Aston Villa was because of the throw-in?
No. I am offering that as a reason, because the reason they won the title was Thomas Gronemark's smart thinking on throw-ins.
No, it wasn't. The reason they won the title is they were better than anybody else. And they had Mane, Salah, Firmino, all these great players, good defence, didn't concede goals,
he says,
great goalkeeper.
If you watch a Liverpool match, there are usually six or seven players who do the throw-ins. If Salah is closest to the ball, he should go ahead and do the throw-in, but only if it makes sense. However, it can be a disadvantage to take the throw-in too fast. The worst thing you can do is take a throw-in fast in a pressure zone.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he getting a lot of work?
He, at the moment, is only working with one club, which is Liverpool.
Okay.
I coached a lot of players who have improved the length of their throws with the help of technical training. When I started working with Kian Hansen, now of Nordland, he could throw 30 metres, which is pretty far, but the throw was high and easy to defend. He ultimately reached 36.7 metres, but throwing it at an incredible speed, you see. So why are you looking?
I can't believe I'm listening to this.
A completely different case is Andy Robertson, who couldn't throw past 19 metres when I met him. That's very, very short. And when you throw that short, it's very, very easy to put a throw under pressure. He managed to extend his throw by nearly 8 metres. And although he'll never have the longest throw, with the training that we've put in place, he's managed to improve the radius of his throws by more than 500 square metres. And so it goes on.
I watched Scotland play last night.
Honestly.
And Andy's throws were not very good.
What? He's playing for Scotland.
No, he's using the Liverpool theory. From the Liverpool throwing coach. That didn't work last night.
I'm all for minutiae. I'm all.
Yes.
And
more so than ever.
Something we're going
game.
To discuss, yeah. I think, with Walter in a minute. But this here is, you talk about changes for change's sake. This here is a guy who's trying to impress upon us. I mean, nonsense. Come on.
The extra 1% a throw in. I don't get it. I really don't get it. As I said to you half jokingly, when we heard about this, 18 months, 2 years ago, whatever, I'll tell you, I'm going to be a throwing coach. Pick up the ball, put it behind your head and throw it to a person who's wearing the same colour shirt as you. That would seem to me to be a pretty good way to take a throw-in.
So you, at the time, you told me you were going to be a kickoff coach.
A kickoff coach, yes. I'm going to be a kickoff coach.
I really can't see the margins.
And I've thought another one. I'm going to be a goal kick coach.
You don't need to these days.
You can see
No, but you don't need
no.
to. You just roll it
no.
6 metres square.
Sometimes when you do that, it's the wrong choice.
You mean
right?
you need
see,
to
you,
put
see,
it into
you
a
haven't thought about it.
Pressure area.
You, if you do that and you're under pressure, that's the wrong goal kick. There you go. So there's another one for us.
Dear.
It's all fun. It's all fun.
Yeah, so our conclusion on law changes, only where...
The game benefits from it. Don't change for change's sake. I mean,
Honestly, David Ellery, we discussed this last week.
We did.
178 law changes and counting.
It's extraordinary.
11 attempts at defining VAR.
We are allowing people, and I mean this, who are not truly football people, right? Who have never played, coached, or managed. Arsene's the exception, but he's only just gone in there to FIFA. He's not been there for 10 years or anything, influencing him. I don't think anyone has. The people who are influencing the game to a huge extent are officials, ex-referees in particular, and how the game is played. Now, fine, if you want to offer up how the game can be refereed, then fine. If you want to make your referees better, then fine. If you want to make VAR better, then fine. But do it by consulting the people who actually coach and manage and play a game. And if we do that, and we all get together and we make the right decisions, a deliberate and thought-out decision, not just say, what can I do now? I'm telling you what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop the goalkeeper using his hands.
Well, Guardiola's ahead of you. He's already done that.
I mean, that'll be next.
Now, the serious point you make, I concur. You're absolutely right. It is generally lawmakers that have the greatest effect upon the game, and those are not the people we want to hear from, which is why I advocate...
I'm not saying get rid of them. I'm not saying they shouldn't be heard and their voices should be muted. Mm. What I'm saying is consult with people who actually are in the game.
But that's why I support what Arsene is trying to do. He's trying to get people to think laterally and cleverly about change that could ultimately lead to a benefit rather than... negative.
But Richard, if somebody takes a corner and he plays it out of play and back in, I'm sorry, it's a bad corner. You should not benefit from putting the ball out of play. So does that mean if I'm a fullback and I just tuck the ball out of my right foot here and right back and I want to clip it down the line and I can't get there's a player in front of me blocking it, doing his job defensively. If I bend it round him, right, and it goes out of play and comes back in, my winger goes down and scores, is that a goal then?
No.
Well, it should be.
No, because you're taking things to... I know what you're saying, but...
I'm taking things.
You're just... That's a silly... Yeah. No, you wouldn't be in a right full-back position you anyway. If you'd
said... I certainly wouldn't be bending it with my right foot either.
Left foot. I've got another one for you. I want to run past you, but our guest is waiting to talk to us. Gary Neville.
Yes.
For chief exec of Manchester United.
Wow.
I will explain more in just a moment. Okay. In the meantime, we need to talk to our guest.
Yes, we do. Top man.
So, Andra, time to meet our guest. One thing I meant to ask you. Before we do that, when you look back on your career and all of the things that you've achieved and done, what are you most proud of?
Do you know that there's things like you win things and you represent your country that are the obvious ones. But things that made me proud when I look back now, when I was a kid at Dundee United, because you go in there full of enthusiasm and older players recognise that and they kind of tag on to you a wee bit. And there was one there in particular, a kind of jobbing midfield player comes centre-back. Good skill, lovely touching the ball, great head tennis player, but was kind of drifting, Richard. Mm. And he used to just play the ball sometimes aimlessly up the line and there'd be nobody there. But when I came in, I was a kid. So I chased all these balls and all of a sudden this...
Aging, jobbing.
Midfield come centre-back, was playing in the Scottish Cup final.
So really what you're saying is extending the career of a senior pro.
He was, when I got there, Jim McLean told me, he said, I've got a bit of a problem with this lad. There's one or two who are just about peaked and I might have to get rid. But Walter, did I mention his name? Walter, I didn't mean to mention his name there.
Mr. Smith, Walter Smith, how are you doing?
Walter.
Is this true?
I have told Mr. Gray on many occasions that my inability to pass made him a better player because he had to run around a wee bit more than he did do when he came to us at the start. He used to stand up there and wait for people to cross it in and then attempt a header. But he started out his career there. He did all right at the start, but really we couldn't wait to get rid of him. As soon as we got rid of him, we went on to better things. He doesn't tell people that.
What I will admit, Walter, is you... was there anybody better at head tennis? Was we Payne or Graham Neary, David Neary? Were they up there at your level? You were the top head tennis player, weren't you, at United at that time?
Uh, so, d- John Holt,
one of my players.
He was good at head tennis, but he's a wee bit of lack of mental toughness in him. I used to get him decision wise, being a wee bit older than him.
We're about to explode a myth here. That being that, like everybody else that hadn't met Walter Smith when I was a young man, I was scared of him.
Really?
Yeah, he exudes fear. I realised that he had a sense of humour when we went to cover a Scottish football match. Commentators always want to be ahead of the pack and know the team.
I was there that night, yeah.
And do you remember Walter Smith came out of the dressing room and Martin Tyler was commentating. Can I just check the team with you, Walter? Walter came out of the dressing room and gave him 11 names.
11 names that weren't playing.
As he went through the list, number four, Martin's face was getting more and more serious. Number five, number six, and Martin's looking at his pad thinking, I haven't got any of these down. Number seven, and then just turned and walked away.
Did you do that often, you?
I remember that. He was such a professional that I thought it would be quite a nice thing to try and upset him.
It was terrific. And I made a mug of myself. I sat with Walter at an Elton John concert in Mallorca. Andrea Botticelli was also on the bill. And yes, we were talking about the upcoming European Cup game between Rangers and Celtic. Walter had just gone back. And I don't know what I was thinking. Elton kindly asked if we would just pop in and say hello.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Walter was
so there. As we're going in, I'm walking in with Walter. And of course, we've been discussing the match. And I remember turning to him and saying, are you going? And then thinking, what a mug. What do you mean, are you going? He's the manager. you must have thought, what's he on? but it was great.
Now, no, listen, that's your reputation. That's a bit.
That
was fully expected.
A couple of stories that we need to check. Alex Ferguson's golf. Is he prone to a little manipulation on the course, Walter?
It would be remiss of me to reveal that.
No, it wouldn't. It's about time. But Alistair McCoist tells a great story of the time he partnered him, and he's in a bush, and he's whispering out of the bush to Ali as you're going down the fairway in your buggy, is he looking? Is he looking? And Ali says, all I can hear is, I'm looking.
But a great one. We played it in Mia. And Mike Feeling, myself, and Sir Alec, and he's driving normal behind the tree. So I happened to be in a bunker near the green, and I kind of ducked down a little bit so he couldn't see me, and I was watching him. And then all of a sudden, the ball came out from behind the tree, and the next thing, he chips his next shot onto the green. So as we get onto the green, he said, that's a four for me. I says, does that include the one that you knocked out from behind the tree? How did you see that? and away he goes. I like to put it in the manner that he's inclined to manipulate the rules a little bit when you're playing with him.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, again, speaking of rules, we had Darren Fletcher with us about a year ago when guests could travel, Walter, to the Middle East, and he told us a fabulous story, subsequently retold. But I'd like to hear it from your point of view. He said, the man probably responsible, more than anybody, for making Ronaldo a player is Walter Smith.
Walter Smith.
And Andy and I looked at him and said, really? How?
He helped make me a player, so I'm not surprised.
No, he said the biggest change that Ronaldo had to face was that when you stopped giving free kicks in practice matches, and all of a sudden, rather than dwell on a ball and jink, step over, get kicked, he had to move the ball at pace. Was that something that you'd done before or you did with a purpose?
No, I hadn't done that before. No, the thing was, I went to, Sir Alec asked me to go and work with him. I was there for like 5 months. And when I went down, Cristiano was there. And, you know, he was, what a talent. And you could see the talent in him, although at obviously 18, 19 years of age, he'd still a bit of maturity to come. So I was there and he would dribble all the time and he would look for Phil a bit. And I didn't realise that it was a very, very competitive environment at Manchester United. So any time that you had a little game or you had anything like that, you know, it was always, Mike and I would always have to argue about who was going to referee. Neither of us wanted to referee. And but Cristiano was one of them. He looked for a foul all the time. So he was doing so in games and everything. So I got fed up after being there about 3 weeks. I got a wee bit fed up with all the difference. So I never gave him a foul. And if I ever gave any of them a foul, I just let him play. And on he went. And it's nice of Darren to say that, but it wasn't an intentional thing on my own part. But the boys obviously remember it. And you know, in my last day there, I was leaving, and you know, Paul Scholes came up to me and said to me, "Well, we'll miss you." I said, "Thanks very much." We might start to get fouls in some of the games.
Quite right, but I mean,
Cristiano Ronaldo would make himself a player. He didn't need any help from me. He was a hard worker. He trained exceptionally hard. He practiced these free kicks and everything, being young right there. And I'd never seen anyone, you know, take free kicks in terms of striking the ball the way he did. He taught himself that. And he's gone on to have a most fantastic career.
So out of frustration from your part then, was born a different player, really, in a way?
Well, you can't. I remember I was only there for 4 or 5 months. This isn't modesty, this is just a fact. You're only there for about months or so. If it did release the ball a bit quicker, and if it did make him there, it was to make life easier for me.
That's fair.
I'm all arguing about my refereeing decisions. You know? So
that must have been fun,
Walter. Easier for
in general. Like standing on the sidelines, I know you'd coached great players, but you stood at Manchester United with these huge names, all personalities, all individual in many ways, but make up a team. That must have been a fun 5 months for you.
It was obviously, the fact that going into management at Rangers and then going, and Sir Alec asked me if I would help him out, help Mike Fielding out. It was more than anything else because Carlos Queiroz had gone to Real Madrid. And, you know, he had never replaced him as assistant, effectively. And Mike was left to do all the training. So I just went there to help him out. And it was fantastic. And the guys there were great. They were terrific attitudes. You had absolutely no problem in training or anything to do. And of course, that goes down to Sir Alec in terms of, you know, his overall management. But for me, being a manager, you maybe do less of the overall training than you used to. So it was years, you know, at Rangers where I hadn't been doing the kind of most of the day-to-day training. So it was going back in time for me, but it was most enjoyable when the players there made it most enjoyable. They had fantastic attitudes, and a lot of them were maybe nearing the end of their career then. And you know, it was a terrific experience for me to go and see at close hand how Sir Alec worked.
I know you're going to say different players, but in terms of ability, Gazza or Ronaldo?
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo made everything of the abilities that he's had. He's gone on and had a career. Gazza's was always going to be up and down. In terms of overall natural ability, you know, Gascoigne is probably above that. I mean, remember, my experience at Cristiano Ronaldo was only for a short period of time. Gazza's a bit longer than that. But Gazza's is all natural. He had no thoughts on tactics or football or training or improving at this or that. He just wanted to play football. That was all he did. He was like a schoolboy. I mean, you give him exercises and things like that, he wasn't really that interested. If you give him a game, he would start in the game. And it was obviously, he had a fabulous talent. But I'm afraid any other aspect, you know, like game knowledge to Gazza. You know, some of the great players that I've happened to work with, Graeme Souness for one. You could see right away that he had a game knowledge. He learned the game. Gazza never learned that. He just played football. And it was fantastic at it. I mean, we'd a great, I would say, 2.5, 3 years at Rangers. Oh, it was terrific. It really was.
By the way, Graham's the best player that Graham's ever worked with.
Yes, I used that. Yeah. And I want to ask you, while you're here with your time at Rangers, here's one. When you and Graham took me there to achieve a boyhood ambition and play my last year at the team I supported as a boy, which I thank you for enormously, if you had any influence in that decision, Mr. Smith. But I want to know if you had any influence in another decision at the end of that season, right? When I had chipped in with a few valuable goals in our first league title of the 9 in a row.
I love this story.
And I'd been subbed with Davy Cooper most of the year. A couple of good players if you need them. You don't put a defender sub when you're Rangers in those days because you're never looking to protect the game. You're just looking to win it if you're in trouble. So I arrive at Hampden, Richard, all ready to go. I said to my family, get your tickets there. I'll be
opposition.
On the bench with Celtic in the final. Yep. So I'm obviously doubly determined if I'm called upon to be ready. And I sit in the dressing room. I'm sitting beside John Brown. And then comes Graham and Walter, and Graham announces the team. I'm not interested in the team because I know Davey and I are not playing, but we're 12 and 14. So I'm sitting near number 12.
Walter knows where this is going. I can sense that.
Right, the team is so-and-so and so-and-so. Substitutes, Davey Cooper. And me. And I went to John Brown. Did he say me or did he say him? And Brownie looked all sheepishly at me and went, I think he said him, Andy. Were you party to that decision, by the way?
If I'd been party to the decision, you would have been, you'd have left Rangers alone before.
Oh, yeah.
No, I take the assistant manager's prerogative in that one. You know, I was assistant manager for a number of years and I learned that assistant managers always have a prerogative when a player asks them, did you have anything to do with that decision? And you quite rightly can say, maybe not in this straightforward language, but you say it's got absolutely nothing to do with me.
The conclusion to the story,
of course, is that
Rangers lost and Graham's only option chasing a 1-0 deficit was to bring himself and four-berth caravan.
He fancied a Scottish Cup final winner's medal, I think. Well, that was it. And we're chasing the game, and he brought himself on. I thought, we're not going to chase much that running about the midfield.
I've got to say, Graham's final game in a league game against Inferno at Ibrox, he was substitute, and he was about to put himself on. Late in the game, and he had told everybody that that's what he was going to do. He was going to do a cameo at the end. And the boys on the bench at the time all started laughing, right? And I'm wondering what they're all laughing at. So Graham takes somebody off, and Graham runs onto the pitch. Well, unknown to me, the ones on the pitch refused to pass to him. So he's running to get the ball off him, and they miss him out, and then they miss him again, and then they miss him again. So he's been on the pitch for 10 minutes. He's not a kick. Nobody will pass the ball to him, right? And when he had announced that he was going to, they seemingly all got together and says, right, when he comes onto the pitch, we'll no pass him. And honestly, if he'd seen his face. Of course, he comes back, and then his question is exactly the same question as Andy's just asked me. Did you have anything to do with that? So I took the assistant manager's prerogative again and said, no, it's got nothing to do with me.
I would have loved, paid any amount of money you like to have seen that. I really would. Particularly that moment as he stepped back off the pitch and hadn't touched the ball.
Fantastic. Well, that was a good Rangers team. We could do that then.
Oh, goodness me. Serious one. Time's chasing us, Walter. What do you make of what's happening at Manchester United right now?
Well, we seem to be going through one of these periods. I think if you look at that clubs that have had managers for long periods of time, you know, Sir Alec Arsene Wenger, for instance, recently in England, they become totally identified with a football club. When they leave, there's always a gap. The managers that have been there since then have, in many ways, Had a struggle, obviously, to match. Even little bits of Sir Alex's success. But when I went there to work, it was all very straightforward. Sir Alex and David Gull had a great working relationship. You know, the template had been set there by Sir Alex for many years. And it was great to see it. And, you know, when I went and looked at Sir Alex, working at him, I've known him for a good number of years, but working closely with him, you realise just how good he was at his job. I mean, and the fact that he made it, and which it's not easy, but the fact that he made it easy was made it look easy was part of his genius. So there's a big hole when both these people left at the same time, and I don't think that that's been replicated by any of the coaches, managers and coaches that have worked there through possibly no fault of their own. And they have, when you look at Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal, David Moyes, they're all extremely successful, extremely successful managers. And they don't need to prove to anybody that they can manage a football club. But they've struggled at Manchester United. So you would say that maybe in terms of the overall management of the club, not football and management, but the overall management of the club, some of the decisions that have been made haven't been the right ones. And, you know, it was always going to be a difficult task to replace Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. You know, my old club at Dundee United with Jim McLean. Yes. The managers are there for 20 years. They obviously have... their influence runs all the way through the club. And when they depart, other people see opportunities to come in and take over. And I think Manchester United have struggled and have maybe lost a little bit of what they were. They were a proud club who Sir Alex always bought into the heritage of Manchester United. And, you know, I think that's been lost a little bit. And it's became, from the outside, a totally financially based club, which, you know, if you look at the likes of Liverpool, you know, not only the recent success, but successes that they've had, you know, they've kept their heritage. They're a working club, working class club. Their support of that, and that's it. And they don't allow... money to dominate everything. And, you know, Manchester United have not really fallen into that kind of category.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the it's only a little thing, but it's the little things collectively that go to make success, is it not? When United were wearing black shorts last season, I said to Andy, I remember Brian Marwood, when he was working for Nike, saying to me, Brian, who's now at Manchester City, of course, we always have to take the new kit in for Sir Alex to sanction. And you know, collar, no collar, you know, V-neck. And Fergie would always say, do what you like with the jersey, but it's red, white, black.
That's it.
And we don't move from that. Absolutely. And when they started wearing black shorts as a first choice last year, I just thought, oh dear, that's not what Manchester United look like. And if they don't look like I expect them to be, I told you all those years ago, and they went to Highfield Road and Bessler and Charlton were on the pitch and they wore red. As a boy, that's what you want, and you buy into that. And I just thought then somebody at the club's lost their way. But anyway, Walter Smith, we cannot thank you enough. Before you leave us, have you got a favourite McCoist story?
Favourite McCoist story? most of the McCoy stories that are among my favourites, I couldn't mention
that's fair.
In any podcast.
Was he ever late for training?
Was he ever early for training? that should have been more of the question. If everybody knows him, but he's one of those guys. He just turns up. And it used to be in the morning, the conversations were always between Graham and myself, were always, and we aren't McCoy, Steve Gellman, and Graham, innumerable number of times, would say to me, right, when he comes in, get him up here. I want to speak to him. So there's always trouble. So he always knew that there was no point in going into the dressing room early because he wouldn't be there. So I used to stand at the bottom of the marble staircase at Ibrox. There was no training ground then. It was always at Ibrox and Chains, and I would always stand at the bottom there waiting for him to come in. So, you know, usually training starts at 10, you know, 5 minutes to 10. If you were lucky, he would appear and through the door, and I'd be standing at the bottom of the stairs. And he knew when I was standing at the bottom of the stairs waiting there, that was it. And he used to take one look at me, and I would just shake my head and point up the stairs. And he would walk straight up the stairs with Marble's staircase and in. Well, I used to depart then because I had to go away and start the training.
As assistant manager, but Graeme always tells me
the great aspects here. He's always that angry with something. And then he would come in and sit down and face Graeme and say, right, I just want to tell you this. And away he would go, and he would start to tell Graeme innumerable stories that would make Graeme laugh. And Graeme used to say to me, after 10 minutes or quarter an hour, we'd be late for training. You know, I would have forgotten what I was going to get on to in following the first one. So he's just one of those boys that wouldn't matter what happens. You could never come away angry.
Still the best. Walter, can't thank you enough. It's been an absolute pleasure for us. Thank you so much for giving us your time. Fantastic. Honestly.
He's a boy. Brilliant. Yeah, he's great, Walter.
Just imagine him in that bunker now, having a little look at it.
Well, I thought you gave him the toughest question you gave him was, have you got a favourite McCoy story? That was the toughest of all.
Back to the serious business.
Yeah.
Ed Woodward, four different managers.
Yeah.
Must have spent $1,000 million.
Uh-huh.
Manchester United, not as good as they were when David Moyes took over. And I said to you back then, they're
probably
eight
not.
Short.
Mm-hmm.
But probably not as good as they were then. It's been a
certainly no nearer winning the title.
But further away, don't you think?
I think they're a long way away, yeah.
It's been an era under Woodward of decline and decay. I don't think he should be entrusted with choosing another manager. I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the former Mulder and Cardiff manager, is the right man to entice big names to Manchester United.
You may have
it needs somebody that can do that, who knows that Gary Neville, after most of us realised he was not going to be a coach, after getting Harry Kane to take corners for England and Barcelona putting seven past Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a smart businessman.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously. He knows how business works.
Right.
He knows how Manchester United works.
Yeah.
He knows how football works. He's been full of good advice. Good advice for Woodward in trying to...
Is he a pro Solskjaer appointment?
I wouldn't have thought... Andy, seriously. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
No, I know. I think it was
really?
A big ask. I thought at a time, said it at a time, not for me. But they've had some decent results. And I think it's...
Which top player?
Yeah.
Top player, not yet at his peak, is going to say yes to Ole when he could go and play for Guardiola, Mourinho, Klopp.
Lampard,
Zidane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
No, it's a big problem for
United. It would be a decision.
So do you agree
with what I'm saying?
So you think the combination of Gary's business acumen, that he has with the hotels and Salford,
the football club,
The football club, and his experience of being a Manchester United player for 10, 15 years,
absolutely
makes him an ideal candidate.
I do. Do you? I'm asking you the question.
Well, I don't know because I've never thought about that. I think a football person, I think somebody who's had the club at heart for this length of time that Gary's had the club at heart, if his business acumen is as good as you say, and I don't know, but I guess it must be, then...
Well, he's running a small production TV production company.
Who would make that decision, though? Ed Woodward
the
would
owners.
Make that decision.
No, the
Glazers.
I just can't see how Manchester United fans now would buy into the next appointment when everything so far...
Do you think there's going to be one then?
I think there's got to be. Don't you, after that 6-1?
Well, one result does not,
of course not
a disaster make, but the manner of the manner of the defeat would worry me. It would worry me. And the level of criticism from Fergie's team, players that played there, condemning pretty much everyone on the pitch for the lack of, desire, fight, whatever you want to call it, would worry me. Listen, I think it's a hugely interesting appointment.
That
I mean,
could have come
would
up,
that lift United, do you think?
I think
the fans?
I think the supporters would buy into that. Yeah.
Buy into
I think Ed Woodward, more than Ollie, I think Ed Woodward's time has
gone.
Yeah, I really do.
Well, he's had, what, four?
Four.
Mm, that's a lot, isn't it?
And $1,000 million. That's an awful lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
So where, how can you persuade the owners that your next idea is the better one?
That's true.
He's had a legend in Van Gaal, too, in Mourinho. Moisey was Fergie's pick, but Solskjaer was his. Yeah. I mean...
That's four, yeah. Oh, listen, it's worth a thought. I mean, I hadn't thought about that this morning until when you arrived here. But certainly, you know, he ticks a lot of boxes, Gary.
Mm.
Absolutely ticks a lot of boxes. If he wants to go down that route, do you think he would?
Yes.
Do you?
Mm.
I
think it'd snatch their hands off. And I think it would be the first positive move Manchester United have made in... Well,
since Fergie left.
Well, yeah, I wasn't anti-Moyes. If they'd given him time, we'll never know.
I wasn't anti-Mourinho.
No, not at all. He delivered their last two trophies.
I wasn't anti-Mourinho, just that player power got the better of Jose again.
Mm.
As it did at Chelsea.
Are you talking about the Mourinho who's been left behind by the game?
The one that took a TV and beat him 6-1? Yeah, him.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, him. It's funny, isn't it? Football's funny. But anyway, that'll be interesting to hear what, if that gets out, and it will, what Manchester United think about your suggestion that Gary might
Well, Manchester
take
United,
over.
I'm sure, won't buy into the idea too much, but it could very well be that others do. And
yeah.
And maybe that's the way forward. Well, thanks for listening. You can rate us, please. We're looking for 5 stars.
Above one would be nice.
This is an exclusive podcast. I repeat, you won't find us anywhere else. So do follow and subscribe. Share on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at Keys and Gray, A-N-D, Keys and Gray Pod, on Instagram at Keys and Gray, the podcast. And you can email Keys and Gray, the podcast at gmail.com, podcast@gmail.com. And we very much look forward to spending time with you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.